Hey guys, Eric here, and I want to talk to you real quick about thedailydownforce.com. Every day, this website covers the latest news and trends in NASCAR, from silly season right through the checkered flag in Phoenix. Need a new morning routine as soon as you wake up? Well, now you have it, dailydownforce.com. This is the website I use to keep up with the industry, the drivers, and of course, what the community is talking about. And speaking of community, dailydownforce.com is also home to some of your other favorite NASCAR content creators. Plus, they've got all sorts of information that I like to keep bookmarked, like schedules, penalties, ratings, and everything you want to know. Oh, and be sure to check out the merch shop while you're there to find some exclusive diecasts and collectibles. So check out dailydownforce.com, that's dailydownforce.com, and I'll see you in the replies.
Hey y'all, Rick Houston here, and I want to tell you about my new show, the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast. I've partnered up with the State of North Carolina Department of Natural and Cultural Resources to help uncover the history behind moonshining mountain boys, professional wheelmen, and the backwoods and city lights of the Tar Heel State. In the first episode, I sat down with Winston Kelly at the NASCAR Hall of Fame for a little behind-the-scenes gossip about Junior Johnson's engineering skills.
He's got two things in his hand, pipe wrench and channel lock pliers, and they weren't new. They had been around the block a time or two.
Wasn't the first deal they built, I bet.
No. The pliers had been red before, but paint had worn off.
And in the second episode, I talked to a professional hillbilly, a.k.a. Dr. Daniel Pierce of UNC Asheville, to find out the real history of moonshiners and their battles with the revenuers.
He wrote about one of his experiences of trying to chase down this bootlegger and this souped-up car, and he complained that the government gave him these piece of crap, cheapo cars, and that were really no match, but he thought he was doing pretty good, and then the guy just hits it and just takes off and practically disappeared. But then the guy makes a bootleg turn and comes back towards him. And it, as he said, it was a game of chicken, and I was the chicken. And so he ran off the road. And actually, he was the guy who caught Junior Johnson at his daddy's still when Junior got tangled up in a barbed wire fence.
So check out the Moonshine and Motorsports Racing Podcast, available on YouTube, dailydownforce.com, and all of your favorite podcasting platforms. And be sure to check out my regular show on NASCAR history, the Scene Bought Podcast.
Hey there, NASCAR fans. Have you got your copy of the latest edition of NASCAR Pole Position Print Magazine? If not, there's no better time than now to subscribe at polepositionmag.com. NASCAR Pole Position is the only print magazine covering NASCAR. Officially licensed by NASCAR, NASCAR Pole Position Magazine is published throughout the NASCAR season, and each edition is an instant collector's item, backed with great feature stories and photography. The magazine is even mailed to you in a poly bag for those who love to collect NASCAR memorabilia. At polepositionmag.com, you can even find past issues available to purchase. Get your subscription to NASCAR Pole Position and get great NASCAR content delivered straight to your mailbox throughout the season. Learn more at polepositionmag.com. That's polepositionmag.com.
Have some fun tonight. Go get us a W.
Hell yeah.
Ready. Turn.
What the
copy. Right foot down.
We got to go,
man. Unbelievable, man. Ready to keep your head in this. Holy
oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'm done with it.
It's your base.
What's going on, guys? It's your boy Darren Gilliam, aka Black Flags Matter, back for another edition of the famous NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Eric cannot make it tonight. What was it, guys? A 3.5 hour flight delay, lightning delay, whatever it is, But hey, at least his flight didn't get canceled and stuff. So he's currently on his way back home, but it's just us. But this is a fun fact before we get into the hot takes. We've done a few shows on my, excuse me. We've done a few podcasts on my channel this year, and The Daytona 500 one, the post-Daytona 500 one, is the only one on my channel this year where we've had all four be here. So something about my channel, just always brings up.
You're the common denominator.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so, man. But now, thankfully, this time we got Danny on. So it's been a minute since he's been on my channel. Good to have Danny back on. And we have the iceberg. So we still got three of the four. We got a lot to go over, man. The streets of Chicago. Man, we got a lot to go over with that. But before we do, we got to get into the famous hot take segment. So, Jarrett, you start us off. What is your hot take for this week?
Oh, boy. I swear to God, I'm not doing this to stay on brand. But I'm going to say it because of how they treated NASCAR and how the lead up was. The problems were not on, I want to say this now, problems that happened this weekend were almost exclusively not on NASCAR, with like the exception of the scoring problems. So my hot take is this. Yes, the ratings were high. Yes, the attendance was good. But because of the way that city officials acted, I still don't think Chicago is the number one fit for this. I don't think it's the right fit yet. I think NASCAR can go to a city that will work with them better and be able to put on a better show, and will actually communicate the policies for weather delays, lightning, all of that. So while it was good, when I say good, I mean while the end product for NASCAR was good, while I think they got a net gain out of this, I think they could have gotten more if a city had worked with them instead of what Chicago did with them this week.
So Oh, my bad. Sorry. I thought it said Darren instead of Danny. Sorry, Danny. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go ahead. You can go first.
No. It says you. You go. You go, you bro. Sorry.
No, go ahead. You go first.
I'm so polite. Someone go.
I'll go then. So we're being too polite now. But all right. Anyways, thank you, Danny. Anyways, so one of my earlier preseason predictions that didn't look good at first. Some thought it was the Ty Gibbs in the playoffs thing, but now it's looking more and more like a possibility. But I'm not here to talk about that for the hot take. One of my preseason predictions was I predicted not just one, but two of the Colleague Racing cars would make the playoffs. And you know what? I'm going to jump back on that trade, man. I think both of them will make the playoffs. I had talked about both of them in a video I did during the off week earlier last month. And I had said, look, Allmendinger just needs to step it up a little bit more on the road courses and needs to be more of a competitor. He's starting to be consistent more in general. And all of a sudden now, Justin Haley and that team have caught some speed out of nowhere. I mean, like, obviously for the street course, you know, track position really helped them out as well. But you still got to be able to, you know, keep the car up there, you know, hit your marks, drive up front. And in Nashville, he qualified top five. So I think the speed is there. There's certainly potential. And, you know, he's not, you know, he's on that cut line there, which we'll get to later on in the show. But, man, you know what? I'm going to hop back on the bandwagon. I think not just one, but both of the Colleague Racing cars will make the 2023 NASCAR playoffs.
My hot take is that I'm not sure that I'm sold on this being a good track per se. I'm not convinced that without the rain, this wouldn't have been as entertaining of a race as it really was. I think that it being a wet track, having to deal with those conditions, might have played into the favor of the Cup Series race, because the Xfinity race, well, it wasn't looking to be that exciting from what we saw of it. Just a lot of, felt like single file, follow Cole Custer. Custer looked like he was easily going to win that race. I'm not sold for the Cup Series. That we didn't get a chance to see it dry. But maybe that was for the better, because I'm not sold that dry this would have been as good of a race.
Ooh, we got some bangers there, too. We got some bangers. Really appreciate it. But the poll is up. And I knew I was forgetting something for this stream. I forgot to switch it from normal latency to low latency. So if we don't react like close to real time with the chat, that's why. But it's not too far off. So just a heads up for those watching. But yeah, the poll's up. And by Jarrett's request, we had Eric in the poll, and Eric's leading the poll so far. So
Eric's hot take is that it was such a great race that he can't even be here to talk about it.
Man, and I was looking forward to hearing Eric's opinions on that, but you know what? We'll have to hear it another time. But fellas, the Chicago Street Race is officially in the books. With everything going against it over the weekend, we just got the race in. That's cause to celebrate right there alone. But man, so much had happened, you know, good and bad in some cases. But hey, let's go over it right now, man. You know what? I'm going to attempt to say his full name. Shane Van Gisbergen. Gisbergen. There we go.
You did better than pretty much 90% of NBC.
And Rick, yeah, better than Rick Allen, at least. So, but yeah, SVG, man, he wins in his NASCAR Cup Series debut. And let me just say before I hand it off to Jerry here, this debut win, this is unbelievable, because in the modern era, which goes back all the way back to 1972, that had never been done before in the modern era. The last time it was done was Johnny Rutherford in 1963. And before him, there was, I believe, either five or six others that did it in the 1950s. And of course, whoever won the first ever NASCAR race in the late 40s as well. So that alone just makes this win spectacular, man. And the fact, you know, it's a, you know, foreign driver coming in, you know, and, you know, showing up us, you know, and NASCAR is not easy to win a race there. And he wins it in his debut. Jarrett, what were your thoughts on that?
I think my first thought on it is I think he saved the weekend fully, because I think even up to about 25 to go, people were split probably half and half. Some saying this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Others saying that this is really cool. But he came from, I believe someone said 20th, charged up through the pack, did what I think no one could do all day, and passed with ease. And in my opinion, put on a clinic towards the end there. I see some of the argument or discourse being like, is this a bad look for cup drivers to get beat by somebody their first time in? But the fact that it has been 60 years to me just says it's so impressive. Yes, these cars are a lot like the cars that he has been racing most of his career, but they're not exactly the same. It's not a one-to-one kind of comparison here. I think what he did should be remembered. I think people should remember where they were when he did it, because that's something historic that, again, a once in 60 years kind of deal. Because before that, the only people that did it other than Johnny Rutherford did it in the first 3 years of NASCAR, which is to be expected, that would happen more in that time. So if I had to give one word for his performance, I'd say impressed.
Yeah, for sure. Danny?
Yeah, and contrary to what people are saying, no, he didn't come over here and make NASCAR drivers look bad. I don't want anyone to say that either. Because really, I hate to say this. Yeah, he did great at the end of it, but for the majority of the race, he was looking like maybe the third best car, because I feel like Reddick and Bell was a little bit better than him in the grand scheme of things. But their cards weren't played as well in those stops where things kind of got like switched around. So just didn't play in their favor, but it did for SVG. And ultimately, this was Trackhouse's fifth win, actually. And they got two in a row. Who would have believed that if I had told you at the beginning of 2023 that Trackhouse would win two consecutive races and the drivers would not be Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez, would you have believed that?
No, definitely not. No, definitely not. I mean, because it's so rare. It's so rare for somebody to just come in from another series and just immediately have success like that, you know, in their debut. And like Jarrett said, man, just it happened. First time since, you know, in 63, this has happened, man. This is, you know, absolutely crazy. But, you know, shout out to Trackhouse, man. They continue to innovate the sport in so many different ways. I mean, like when this Project 91 car was announced, you know, like their ambition was to get, you know, drivers from, you know, all over the world to compete and stuff. At first, when those first dropped, I think like some of, you know, the fan base's first thoughts were, oh yeah, let's have Jimmy Johnson run the Coca-Cola 600. But nope, they thought, you know, bigger and better, you know, more ambitious. First you get Kimi Raikkonen, and now you get, you know, SVG in one of these cars, and he wins in his debut. And shout out to Tiggs too. Tiggs was working on the Project 91 car. That was awesome to see him celebrate on Twitter too. It's good, you know, he works hard in the sport, he finally gets a win. But let's not forget about the battle SVG had with Justin Haley at the end. Oh my gosh, that was a doozy there. I mean, Justin Haley was holding his own. He had the much older tires, got the lead on track position, but he was still able to hold it though. And then I think it was, yeah, with like five to go there, it felt like SVG was just toying with him there. You know, he knew he had the fresher tires. He took his time and drove to victory. But hey, you know, Jarrett, though, Justin Haley, I mean, still a valiant effort, you know, to get a P2 there. You starting to see him as, you know, like more potential for a playoff spot?
I don't know about a playoff spot just yet, but it shows, I think, the potential overall that he has. What I respected about what he did is that he didn't go out there and just, you know, crash him like some drunk spotter would do. He instead went out there and raced him clean, raced him with respect, and that respect was given back and forth. Gisbergen put on a hell of a move on him, and he tried the best defense he could, overshot the corner, and the more patient, experienced driver won out with the better cars, better tires, better pretty much everything at that point. I think the fact that he put up a battle at all at that point in the race was impressive enough. And you've been looking the last couple weeks, and colleague overall, like you talked about earlier on, Darian, they have been getting faster, whether it's top 15 or top 10 speed. Let's not pretend that he was up there because he was one of the three best cars out there. But the team had the right luck. They've had the right strategy the last couple weeks. So they're starting to put stuff together, which at this point of the season, with how I think, honestly, a little underwhelming they've been so far, I think this is a good leaping off point for moving forward. Plus, Super Speedway's coming up, so they could win there too.
Yeah, and anyone can win there. Yeah, for sure, for sure. And just turn the whole playoff field upside down. Danny, do you think? What do you think about Haley here?
I'm sorry. I don't think any of the college drivers are making the playoffs unless Almendinger can score a win on one of the few remaining road courses. I'm just not sold that Colleg is all the way there yet. He did good. He did really good. But from the second that SVG got around Elliott, Chase Elliott was basically realized, this guy's way faster than me, I got to let him by. When that happened, I knew no one was going to stop him. So yeah. there was really no hope for the 31 there at the end.
Hey, he was on a mission. SVG was on a mission that
day. He was on a mission from God.
Someone else who was on a mission from God, though, was Austin Dillon trying to make a run there at the end, and he gave it all he had, and he went to the wall for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about some of the tomfoolery in a moment here later on, but I want to go over the top 10 here, give some of your thoughts on here. So SVG ends up winning in his NASCAR debut, started from third, ends up winning. This is like that NASCAR Thunder 2003 stream I did, and like one of the fantasy drivers wins. You know what I mean? Just totally unexpected. And it's funny because I say like it was like, you know, totally unexpected, but like he's a road course ringer. That just goes to show how, you know, deep the competition is in the Cup Series. So for those saying like, oh, he just came over and just dominated, like, no, it wasn't that easy. But Justin Haley from 37th place ends up finishing P2. Chase Elliott from 26th in P3. Kyle Larson 4th. Kyle Busch 5th. We're going to talk about him next. Austin Cindric 6th. He needed that top 10. Michael McDowell 7th. Joey Logano 8th. Ty Gibbs 9th. And Chris Buescher rounds out the top 10. Fellas, obviously there's a lot of unique storylines, you know, amongst the top 10. But the most unique to me, though, Kyle Busch still ends up with the top 5 after hitting the tire barriers. And he must have had no damage on, right, Danny? No damage on for Kyle Busch?
Must have not, because really everyone who went in those tire barriers seemed to be fine. It's like if you hit the wall like Harvick and Elliott did in qualifying, yeah, you're done. But go to those tire barriers, a little bit more forgiving, because we saw Gregson hit it like, what, 4 times? And
yeah.
Then he spun out coming into the pits after the race.
Yeah. That's just, and he was the first. Yeah, he was the first to hit that, and you just thought, oh, he's done. But then immediately you go back to Chase Elliott at the Roval. What was it, 2020, I believe, right?
And really, yeah, because that one at the Roval, like, that showed how different of a Kyle Busch this was, because at the Roval, he literally, like, Kyle Busch literally rage quitted that one. Mm-hmm. This one, he didn't give up. He said, no, just get me back out there. Because there was Cruz that was coming up, like, just expecting him to get the window net down and come out of the car, you're done. No, he was like, no, we're not done. Just get me back out. And ultimately, it's good that he did that, because that instructed the rest of the crew the rest of the day, hey, if they go in this, they're probably fine.
I'm gonna troll the opposite way of way I usually would. Chase Elliott better than Kyle Busch, confirmed, better comeback. He won the race. Kyle finished 5th. No, and all joking aside, when I saw that the first lap, because again, like I said, I was not like I gave the race overall, not the finish. The finish, 10 out of 10. I love that. And when I say the finish, I mean like the last 20, 22 laps or so. But I gave the race overall like a 5-6 out of 10 just because of the first 2/3 of it. But he, like, when I saw him first going, I'm like, oh my God, this is going to be one of those days, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was for Noah Gragson, but it wasn't for Kyle Busch in the sense, like, I don't even remember where he was running most of the race. I don't have my notes on me for the where if it was got stage point, but
I believe it was like mostly in the back at points outside the top 20. Like I think like at one point I saw him like the like running a lowest position of 27th, 28th, I believe. You know, so definitely the pit strategy, you know, like, you know, staying out definitely helped him out too. Definitely, yeah, for sure.
And I think, you know, a lot of the chicanery when it came to NASCAR scoring, I don't know if it helped Kyle Busch per se, but I think it did help some of those faster cars get stuck in the back for the, and it helped those kind of slower cars or cars that ended up at the front. So I'd say, like, you know, but that's the thing about NASCAR is you got to get a little bit of luck when it comes to the end of these races too. So I'd still overall say it's pretty impressive that he managed to stay up there, race with Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott and all of them. So, again, just another solid run for Kyle Busch. That's his sixth top five of the year. If I had to tell you there's only two drivers with more top fives than Kyle Busch this year, as he's tied with a couple others for with six, who would you think they'd be?
William Byron, Kyle Larson.
Boom.
Damn. Oh, I was right. Oh, wow. Wow. Hey, it's really been checkers or wreckers this year for Kyle Larson, really. Yeah. But he's starting to get a little bit better now. Ended up scoring a top five over the weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, before we move on to the tomfoolery that took place in the field, because there was multiple things that happened, some notables outside the top 10. I mean, Denny Hamlin, the pole sitter, finished 11th. You know, he hit the wall earlier and stuff, so it was kind of screwed.
He originally didn't even want to go race on that service.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny how that works. And then William Byron, 13th. Then a guy who's been struggling all year, you know, Ryan Preece, you know, 15th now. He gained some points over the weekend. AJ Allmendinger, 17th. And some of these guys, you know, they were running up front, but, you know, the whole pit strategy just screwed them over and stuff, too. Now, you know, some of these guys, you know, certainly didn't need that, you know, for the whole playoff hopes or whatever. But let's move on to the tomfoolery that took. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Real quick, shout out to Jenson Button for racing up there in the top 10. And for Josh Balicki, that 78 team was running in the top 20 for much of the day. Finished 23rd at the end of it. Andy Lally, 26th in the RWR car. So some of the smaller teams, I think, should get a little shout out for having some pretty good runs.
Yeah, I mean, Button, that was funny. That was a funny moment, too. Future NASCAR is so cool because little did I know, like a decade ago, that I'd be watching Jenson Button get spun out entering the pit lane, a former F1 champion. And then as he's trying to turn around the car, he nearly hits he nearly gets hit in the back by the reigning NASCAR Cup Series champion. So I don't know, there's something about NASCAR in 2023, man. Just it's awesome to see. It's awesome to see. It's wild. It's wild, too. These are the types of storylines we love to see. And also tomfoolery. It's also some of the stuff we love to see for entertainment purposes. Now, really quick, before we get into that, we're almost to 100 likes. Make sure to lick the like button, everybody. 380 people watching. Lick the like button. Thank you so much for tuning in. But anyways, let's start with Gregson here. Noah Gregson. And I was on record as saying this on Twitter. I'll be on record saying this now. Like, Noah Gregson he's on pace to having not only one of the worst bad seasons ever, but also one of the worst rookie seasons. And you could even make the case, maybe the worst rookie season ever. Now, of course, you can't blame it all on him, you know, parts of the season. This team has been, you know, it's his first year in the Cup Series. And this team, it's basically been, you know, just one of those years where just get to next year, man. They're just trying to get to next year. And obviously a lot of personal stuff had came up. You know, I don't want to get too much into that. But, you know, this team's been going through a lot. Now, Noah Gregson, three times during the race, turn six. Oh, my gosh. The trilogy battle. The trilogy
got real comfy over there.
Yeah, very comfy. So comfy to the point that he was so comfy to the point that, you know, Wendy's decided to, you know, run the Baconator ad thing right as it, hey, after one of his spins.
Props to them. Wendy's got their money's worth for the advertising, especially right there in the heart of McDonald's land because they're based in Chicago.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
They got their money's worth one way or another. Basically, his car is how you would feel like if you ate too much Wendy's.
Oh yeah,
and you just spin out and crash into a wall all the time.
You might as well call that by the end there. I mean,
you might as well call that corner the Baconator corner next year with how many times they got hit, you know, might as well.
He was cooking something. It just, it burnt really bad.
Yeah, he was cooking those tires whenever he spun out, for sure. But it was just funny because you see caution, Noah Gregson turn six. Caution, Noah Gregson turn six. And after the third time, you're like, is this it? Like, are you done? And just like, nope, he just kept on racing the entire time. So
I got to say this. They showed at one point, because Wendy's paid a lot of money for this race, and NBC was like working with them a lot. I could see a lot of stuff. They showed at one point Noah Gregson was doing an autograph session, I think at a Chicago-based Wendy's location.
Yeah.
And I noticed he was wearing like this outfit that was completely bacon from head to toe. And he also had, while he was signing autographs, a Frosty. And you go to Wendy's, you get a Frosty, you get the little small one, you know, not too much, just a little ice cream here and there. He had like a large soda cup or something like that of Frosty and was just eating that while he's signing autographs. I'm like, how Noah Gregson like?
Yeah, he's so chill, you know. As far as like a sponsor ambassador and stuff, a sponsor representative, he's definitely one of the best guys. But just the on-track performance, man, just obviously this year is a wash. But the icing on the cake, though, just it was after the race, man. Just Andy Lally's just chilling on his radio and stuff, letting them know, hey, this is what happened. And then Gregson lost it. And Andy Lally says on the radio, this effing idiot spinning out to the pit lane. And I guess the team thought it was him at first. He's like, nah, it was the 42, not me.
Sorry, I'm just laughing at Denny Delivers. Put Noah Gregson's name surrounded by like Chinese or Mandarin text, whatever, and basically making the he's gonna go race for the Tigers in China.
The Guangdong Tigers of the Chinese Racing League of NASCAR. And if that ever becomes a real thing, just oh my gosh, the memes for that, for any driver announced for that series.
Get ready to learn Wendy's, buddy.
Yeah, I think. Hey, Gregson, maybe he's learned a little too much Wendy's now. But nah, I don't. You know what, Gregson? Just get through the season, man. Just get through the season. I feel like at this point, that's just the mentality of the team. Let's just get through it. You know, just get through it. And then we had mentioned this earlier. Austin Dillon, while running P2, he hit the wall. He hit the wall coming out of the final turn, and then, you know, just kept full throttling it and just eventually just stopped it and backed it up too.
Yeah. Credit to him that he didn't stop on the track and stop the racing action. He went back on pit road. I know NASCAR usually no-nos that, but I have a feeling they were okay in that instance with it with nobody around.
Yeah. And the track's big enough too. I mean, it's a street course. It'd be different if it was an oval, it'd be understated, but like it's a street course and, you know, it was the first turn of it. So it was, you know, plenty of time to just get that car backed up and not, you know, manipulate the race in any type of way. But the main thing, though, what'd y'all think of the stack up? Jerry, I'll start with you. That stack up was crazy. That was a crazy stack up.
I'll be honest. I was expecting that like multiple times in this race. And we'll talk about it in a minute. I think that NASCAR's restart policy, they need to do it a lot more tracks than just this, was a big reason why we didn't see so much of it. But man, the memes wrote themselves. I can't believe, and maybe I missed it because I'll be honest, like I didn't like Twitter before, and now that it doesn't work, I don't like it even more. But I can't believe nobody made an edit with the Blues Brothers with the big crash at the end. Like I can't believe nobody made that edit.
Damn, that's a missed opportunity.
Maybe they just didn't want to fight that copyright.
Well, if somebody does and wants to post it on Twitter, just tag us and we'll retweet it after the show. But we all knew it was coming, and that's kind of that was initially part of what kind of, you know, ticked me off about this course layout before. I'm impressed they didn't do it more because of how narrow those corners were, 90-degree corners you couldn't really see around. Like I said, I think NASCAR did their side of it. I swear I'm starting to sound like NASCAR shill in the chat. but I swear, I think 90% or 95% of what they needed to do, they did. And I think that's part of why we didn't see so much of that. I'm just hoping NASCAR learns from this when we go to Indianapolis or COTA. Or honestly, I'm fine with just about any other place we have stack ups on a regular basis. Because, you know, I know I'm kind of getting off on a tangent here, but I loved not having to expect everyone to just eat shit in the first turn.
Yeah, it was refreshing. Danny, do you agree?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, no, it was refreshing for sure. And, you know, one of the things that certainly helped out with that, with the, you know, just with only one, you know, stack up incident, was certainly the single file restart. So, fellas, let me ask you this question. I just put up the poll in the chat. After what we saw last weekend on the Chicago street course, as far as the restarts were concerned, should single file restarts be used at more road courses? Danny, what do you think?
I'm gonna say no on that one, mainly because I feel like the other road courses are actually still wider. The ones that are actually built to be a proper road course are wide enough, I think, that we can still make it work. This one, a lot of the parts in that track, especially coming to the start finish line, were pretty narrow straightaways in some parts. So I think it worked better, especially when we had wet conditions. I think it worked better for this track. If we go to Watkins Glen, we go to Sonoma, we go to some other places like that, Coda, whatever you may have it, I think the double file restart still works fine at those locations. But for a straight course, something like that, I think it worked better in this case.
I think I kind of said I'm all for going single file at road courses, just because I'm sick of seeing cars get wrecked all the time. I think Sonoma and Watkins Glen are, I think they're better with those ones. Maybe you can keep that double file, sure. But Indianapolis, Coda, those two right off the bat, and any other street course you do, I think having a rolling start, I think even if you do the double file restarts, a rolling start out of whatever corner is the last one to the finish line should be something they do, so you can spread these cars out. You're not having Joey Logano try and go from 21st to win in one corner like he did at Indy. I think that would make it, honestly, it'd make it more acceptable of a show to watch. I think the last couple years, like the end of Coda, the end of the Coda race, I think we all thought the first 75 laps of that were pretty dang good. And then we turn around and we have a complete just mess up, or not even 75 laps, 75%, but just a complete mess up of the entire vibe of that race. And now people look back and think it's an awful race because of how dumb those restarts were. Indy road course, same thing. I think that just these little tweaks and changes could do that. And I'll be honest, I'm a nostalgic fan who wants some of the old stuff back that I miss.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Definitely need to do this on more road courses, but when I say more, just Coda and the Indy road course, to Jared's earlier points. I mean, Sonoma and Watkins Glen, yeah, like those are perfectly fine for double file restarts. It's still entertaining, you know, still get the best racing, of course. But yeah, no, for, you know, if we're going to have the Indy road course still, definitely need to implement those single file starts and at Coda as well. And the chat agrees as well. 77% have voted and they think, definitely more tracks need to have single file, more road courses need to have single file restarts. Probably they agree with the tracks we listed and probably agree that, yeah, Sonoma and Watkins Glen, we don't need that. But it leads us to another question, though. And, you know, we had talked about, you know, some of y'all have already given your opinions on, you know, the race and stuff. But now what does the future hold? We're going to get into the ratings and stuff a little bit later on. But I'll start with you, Jared, you being, you know, from there and stuff, from the area. What do you think the future holds for the Chicago street course?
I mean, I think a little more positively of the future of it now after the cup race went well. But I think it all has to do with however Chicago politicians view it and whatever kickback money and a little under the table money they get for it. They don't care about ratings. I really don't think they do, because they got plenty of different teams that'll get ratings the same as that race or better. I think NASCAR would need a Chicago more than a Chicago would need a NASCAR. So I think what you got to look at is overall the weekend itself. And if you look at the overall weekend, I think the Xfinity race was plain bad. You had three of the four concerts canceled. You had somebody break in, and I believe their Corvette is what somebody said on the racetrack.
Did some laps.
And you had flooding. The Cup race, I think that for NASCAR fans, and well enough, overshadowed a lot of the bad and wiped a lot of that away, and so it should be, especially with the finish and how it went. But when it comes to people who are looking out for, you know, well, probably their own interests, but we'll just say the people of Chicago, I think that you got to look broader at it, too. I mean, he was very much against it before, played, you know, gave a nice, you know, save a face or whatever when it was in town. But now I have a quote I put in here I want to read. It's a typical politician speak, but the mayor, had put that we're grateful despite the extreme weather that NASCAR was able to deliver with very minimal disruption. Like everything I inherited, I'll assess and grade it with an open process. Now, if it were to return, it'd be next year, July 6th and 7th. And they need to decide by the end of the year with all this. But I don't think that, you know, I think NASCAR, like I said, can do this in just about any city that will welcome them in there. So I don't think it's a necessity that they have to come back as much as if they can find a city to take it over, whether that be Pittsburgh, New York, Philadelphia, Boston, Denver. There's lots of options.
I don't know that a street course necessarily needs to stay in one city for a long period of time. The whole thing of this is to take it to different markets that, you know, just to put it out there into a city. It works, and we've seen it can work, but it doesn't necessarily have to be in Chicago. I think that we could take this, move it to play it like a WrestleMania, take it to a different place each year. Maybe keep it reserved for that weekend, but take it different places. Have it in New York City. Have it in Washington, D.C. Have it in, even though they have a track nearby, Atlanta, Georgia. Take it to some other big cities across the United States or even into other countries and try it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, like after the race and stuff, you know, obviously, you know, recency bias, like, oh, yeah, this is definitely going to be, you know, a mainstay on the calendar now. But, I you know, from the very beginning, I was like, if this was considered a success, I could definitely see it back for, you know, two more years. But then after that 3-year contract's up, I could definitely see, you know, NASCAR just, you know, like, hey, like, you know, having different cities bid for a race and stuff too. I mean, like, you know, other cities were watching this to see how it would go. And with everything going against it, now, obviously, you know, Chicago may not care about the ratings as much, you know, because they have so many teams, so many sports teams and stuff anyways. They're used to, you know, the eyes being on them sometimes, right? So, but other cities may feel differently, though, about it, you know? And this opens up the window just so many possibilities for street course markets, man. Like the first couple of cities on my mind, you know, I definitely want to see, like, you know, race in the streets of New York City. You know, that'd be a major accomplishment. Or go to Denver, go to Seattle. Those are some pretty untapped markets and have some NASCAR history as well. You know?
Even though someone pointed out Washington, D.C. would probably be ruined by politics too, that you're not wrong. But the visual of a race happening with the White House in the background would be kind of cool. Well,
that'd be cool.
You want to know? Okay, I know we're going in fantasy land when we talk about it. But you know what's something that's really cool about Washington D.C. And this is going to give me away as a total nerd if I hadn't already. But the city of Washington D.C. is set up differently than most modern cities are. Most modern cities are set up in like 90-degree corners, blocks like that. Whereas Washington D.C. is set up in a wheel and spoke pattern with the roads, where the roads all go out, and then there's sort of like a wheel of like a circle going around it in a lot of areas. So that would honestly, I don't know if it'd be good racing, but it would definitely be a unique kind of street course.
Oh yeah, definitely one of the most unique street courses.
So you're saying with the spoke pattern, we could almost make the track do like a, I don't know the right word, it's like a cross kind of functionality, or where it looks like that. I don't know.
I think there could be. There could be a lot of different ways to do it. Now I want to see it, and I know it's not going to happen.
I mean, not to get political, I don't care who the president is. It would be cool if Washington, D.C. have the president of the United States wave the green flag.
Yeah, that'd be, yeah, definitely need a lot of Secret Service, by the way.
Yes.
Probably three or four Secret Service.
Bubble wrap now, or something.
Now, I will say this, though, and end off here on a funny joke. Just, you know, if let's say we do get a race in Washington, D.C., and Biden's the president, just don't have his son, you know, wave the green flag. Just saying. Anyway.
Or drive. No, okay. Or we call drive, it the Corruption, right? 220 at the D.C.
Oh, sorry, man.
Sorry. I'm sorry. He'd probably say, like, gentlemen, turn them on.
Something crazy. But anyways, yeah, the poll, the chat agrees, though, as far as the future of this race with me, 66% say that, they see this race going on for 3 years. And then 26% think it's only going to be a one and done, but 7% think it'll last 5+ years. So that might be a little more, you know, Chicago-based locals, you know, hoping for that. But, you know, hey, if you were there. Yeah. But hey, you know what, though? It was still cool. It was still cool. They were able to get all that stuff in.
I'll say this. Yeah. No matter what you thought of it, the visuals were really badass.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the photographers that I follow on Twitter, their pictures they put out were just awesome to see.
I do know somebody who helped. So my uncle had company had sponsored the Xfinity race, and he said that, like, when they were trying to change stuff, though, it was so difficult because of the close quarters that they couldn't move anything in the garage area and on pit road. So if they do come back, that is something I think that needs to be addressed on a team side. But I'm just there are a lot of logistical issues that need to be addressed, and I'm just wondering if I think the city's going to hold out until they get a better deal,
As far as I know, they have until 180 days until the next scheduled race to decide.
I saw it was January 1st, 2024 is the deadline. To kind of knowing the area, basically whoever was elected because they're not Lori Lightfoot. Now, I think what they're going to do is get some polls in Chicago and see what people actually think. If the polls are approving, it's coming back, I think. If not, though, or if it's wishy-washy, I think then it'd be more in jeopardy.
Yeah, one of the best visuals, though, all weekend, and chat, do your thing. One of the best visuals all weekend definitely was, like, coming out of the final turn. Like, you just saw, like, you know, like, just the regular streets of Chicago. There was a walkway. There was, like, steam in the background and stuff. There was, like, these, like, I don't know, I think there was, like, trains running in the background over the people walking on the streets as well. Like, it was an awesome visual of the city. And then on the straightaway, like, I used one of the pictures for the thumbnail. Got these giant buildings in the background with, I think it said, like, drivers start your engines or race. It said something on the buildings. But, yeah, that's one of the benefits of running in a street course. You may not get the best overall racing product, but the visuals, oh, my goodness, the visuals are awesome. And that leads me to my final question. You know, with all the stuff that was going against the race during the weekend, the weather issues, the on-track product maybe not being the best, you know, under dry conditions, would y'all consider this weekend a success for NASCAR? Danny, I'll start off with you. Yes or no?
Yeah, I would consider it a success. Even with all the weather, most of the crowd still held it out and still – you know, stuck around for the race. It's kind of a shame we don't have Eric here, because it would be nice to hear what was the at-person experience of that, but I'm sure he'll probably have a vlog if he hasn't already put out yet. I haven't noticed it yet, but so you get a chance to get an idea from him what it was like. But yeah, I would say it was a success. I think those who were there seemed to really like it. And of course, you know, we were all kind of a little skeptical, but when I saw that news video of that one little boy saying, like, I can't believe out of all the places mm-hmm. they could go, they chose Chicago. It's like, okay, if little man's happy, I'm happy.
That's what it's all about. And really, like, you know, before the racing had even taken place and stuff, before the weekend had really started, I mean, there was this whole Bubba Wallace block party thing. And there were, you know, thousands of people. There were a lot of 7, people that 000. Showed up to them. Yeah, they showed. Yeah, 7,000 people showing up to that. And
Bubba about needed a secret service himself, because he was just crowded by everyone.
He was crowded
to see him.
And stuff. And, like, you know, they brought the pit car, you know, they brought a car out there. They did pit stops. And, you know, some of these people that, you know, they'd never been to a NASCAR race in their lives and stuff too. And now, you know, they're getting, you know, the up close experience, not just with the race, but, you know, with certain personalities, the teams and stuff. Like, that's what it's all about there. And yeah, like what Danny said, yeah, it's that little kid, you know, they really could have gone anywhere, but they chose there. So that's what it's all about. But Jarrett, was this a success or not?
I think there's three ways that I can kind of break it down. But really quick, I wanted to – Adam Stern tweeted this about what Ben Kennedy just said on the street race. He said basically, so while Ben Kennedy set up NASCAR Chicago, he also has been taking site visits for potential other races and exhibitions in Canada, New York, Denver, the Middle East, Seattle, and Mexico.
Oh, ooh, interesting. So very interesting.
Just not taking any of that Saudi blood money. But when it comes to the weekend being a success overall, short term, because of the ratings, yes. Having almost 5 million viewers, having about 250,000, if my math is correct, in Chicago alone watching, yes. Short term, I think that would be. The overall weekend itself, when it comes to execution, yes and no. Sunday, yes. Xfinity, because I think they handled the Xfinity race, even with the cautions, terribly, and they learned from that for the next day. So I'll lean yes. Long-term, I think still be to be determined, because I think long-term, like if this week we see a bump up in ratings from last year, and then we see that next couple weeks, because we got 5 straight weeks on USA Network now. And you can kind of see it stem from that point on. Yes. I would say total success in that department. I still think, though, long-term, or even 2-3 years at this point, I still think that moving it out of Chicago would be a better idea. My idea that I had said on my post-race stream is if you can manage to get this longer and make this a true success over time, you see the Chicago market bumping up more, you see overall ratings popping up more, you're trending all the time, you're doing the mass marketing you did for this weekend, which Fox, take notes, because they did more marketing for this than Fox did for the Daytona 500, and that is pathetic. And more big events in NASCAR need to be promoted like this, because this promotion, I'll say this, anything else, the promotion was perfect leading up to it. Now it's just, you got to do that more often. I feel like NASCAR would be in such a better place if they can learn that as the most important thing from this weekend.
Yeah, thank goodness Fox didn't do the broadcasting, because that race would have been so much more, like, it wouldn't have been as entertaining if Fox had taken over.
My idea on my post-race stream was, if you know whatever one's the last year, try and have like a year where it's Chicago, Chicagoland, because if you're going to try and build the market and then just leave forever, then there's no point. It's just going to fall away again. You have a track that NASCAR owns, they keep up on, do sort of a transition year to get people like, hey, we have this track here, we can't stay in the city forever, and do the same thing like in New York. Hey, we got a track, I don't know how far away, but Watkins Glen, New York, that you can go to, and go to, you know, I don't know, maybe if you go to Seattle, hey, we got the track up in Portland. Stuff like that. If they do
Washington, there's Richmond, not that far away.
Yeah, they need to do, if they're going to do this, and this is going to be where NASCAR goes when it comes to promoting to new audiences, I think they need to have a plan in place for not just the year of, but afterward. Because you've seen with LA where they kind of one-upped it a little bit for the Coliseum race, but it more or less was the same, and you saw the dip in ratings and the dip in attendance and just overall scope of it. They need to learn from that and try and have a real plan to move forward and kind of one up the year before rather than do the same thing. So people are like, oh, I kind of know what to expect kind of deal.
Do you guys think there could be a possibility where we see NASCAR coexist in a street course weekend of another major series like IndyCar or even Formula One?
Well, I know I heard something about IMSA would be involved next year if this still happens.
And that makes sense. It's the same ownership, but I'm thinking it would be cool to see different ownership groups collaborate and say, hey, let's work on one weekend together.
Yeah, because I mean, those are the two, IndyCar and NASCAR, two of the biggest, you know, major auto racing, you know, sanctioning bodies. That'd be great.
Now, IndyCar currently has the Nashville Grand Prix. I think this is realistically the last year Titans are getting ready to build their new stadium, which would be going in where the paddock is currently at for the current configuration. And I don't know that they have a backup plan associated for that. So for now, I'm saying that goes away. Maybe they want to take their Music City Grand Prix date. And if they don't move it to the Nashville Super Speedway for an oval race, maybe they want to go to another street course, and they might call NASCAR up and say, hey, y'all still in Chicago? Where are you going?
Yeah, but the IMSA deal too. Yeah, that would make a little bit more sense because, you know, NASCAR currently owns that now. But yeah, IndyCar though, hey, I would definitely want to hold out hope for that for sure. But
I will say last thing. That promotion that they did for this weekend is just amazing. And I think I said it in our group chat on Friday. That I was like, man, this is more than even the Netflix series has done so far. Because when you think of promotion for over a year for a big American event, I can't think of anything that IndyCar or Formula One has done better than what NASCAR did. Execution-wise, again, there's still a lot to be desired in the city. If they're willing to do it long-term, needs to pitch in more, even though there was a good amount around the city that they got set up. But honestly, like, that was vintage NASCAR marketing. Just put it everywhere. Like, my dad was sitting out with me. We had paused a show. We were waiting for, like, I think my mom and brother to come out. We were going to watch a movie or something. It was paused. And on the pause screen of, like, the five ads that were rolling is NASCAR in Chicago. And a big 22 Joey Logano car and the big Chicago stuff. And right in your face. More of that, please. You know,
if I'm not mistaken, me and Darian were watching Money in the Bank on Saturday. I think there was even an advertisement for this race during that show.
Oh, yeah.
It was on Peacock. And keep in mind, this is a race that was being broadcasted to people I'm sorry, this is a wrestling show that's being broadcasted to people all over the country and all over the world because it's happening in England. So you had the chance for even people in England to find out what is this NASCAR thing.
Yeah, that's we've been preaching this for years. We need more of it, but we finally got it for sure. But let's do it for like all, you know, most of the races, right? Let's have this level. If we can have this level of promotion for most of the Cup Series races on the schedule, NASCAR would be in much better shape for sure. But closing out the poll though, was this weekend a success for NASCAR? A whopping 94% say yes, while 6% say no. So some people either just don't like the street course racing, which is understandable, or you just may not like the city of Chicago.
Is there really that many burner accounts for a spotter in here?
Or a certain NASCAR YouTuber. But anyways, we'll get into the ratings for sure. But before we do that, the playoff bubble. We keep talking about this playoff bubble situation, guys. Oh my goodness. Look, you may not like the playoffs all the way, but if you're going to have them, at least have the cutoff line be entertaining, right? And oh man, with 8 races to go, let's go over them. Right now, currently in 15th and 16th are the two Toyota affiliated teams of Bubba Wallace and Ty Gibbs. Bubba Wallace is plus 15 and Ty Gibbs is only 6 points above the cut line. Now, from 17th to 24th, oh, this is where it gets good, Chad. This is where it gets, you live for stuff like this. And P17, 6 points below the cut line is Daniel Suarez. In 18th is Michael McDowell, only 10 points below the cut line. 19th, AJ Allmendinger, minus 24. In 20th is Alex Bowman, minus 26. Justin Haley, 21st, minus 45. Tied with Austin Cindric as well. In 23rd is Corey LaJoie, minus 47. And finally, the sport's most popular driver currently sits 24th in the standings, Chase Elliott, minus 55. So, fellas, I'll start off with you, Danny. Just, just give me your initial thoughts on that playoff cut line there. You know, after I read all of those, all the point standings off, just what do you think? What do you think about how close it is?
I think it's pretty cool that we've got guys like Michael McDowell having a chance to get his way in. It's also cool to see guys like AJ Allmendinger, his first season back in the Cup Series full time, and he's got a chance to make it into the playoffs here. Ty Gibbs, very first season in NASCAR, and he's got a chance to get his way into it. Bubba Wallace, even, I feel like in years past, he's been so far outside the cut line, you feel like he has to win Daytona, but now he's in as of right now. Mm-hmm. So he's showing some good speed there. Then you got guys like Chase Elliott and Alex Bowman. They've been sidelined from injuries. Bowman affected by big points penalty. It's kind of crazy. Bowman, if he didn't have that points penalty, he could have still been fine even with the injury time. But he's still realistically not out of it, minus 26.
So for me, I'm still going to fixate on Chase Elliott on this one. because he has to average, I did the math, 8 races, 55 points. You have to average 6.875, so 7 points a race over, at the moment, Ty Gibbs. If Elliott doesn't win this weekend and nobody underneath that cut line or on the cut line wins, I think the realistic ability of him being able to point his way in and beat guys like Bubba Wallace and Ty Gibbs goes up immensely. As long as he doesn't like wreck, that could very well happen. But 55 points, which again, the reason we talked about this group wasn't so, Chase Elliott's last, so we can add him in and talk about him, is because he is now within 1 race of the cut line, even without winning a race. So I think it is very possible that he does this. And you could see, he's been cutting like 20 point chunks here and there, like his bad races, he's still cutting like 9 or 10 points out of that. If you look at the amount of points he's been scoring a race, he would easily point his way in at the clip that everybody is going right now. So he's the true wild card in this whole group. It is interesting. We talked about the colleague guys though. AJ Allmendinger only 24 out with a good amount of road courses left. Even if he doesn't perform to the standard that we are used to him performing, which he hasn't so far, he still could easily point his way in, especially with 2 super speedways in there, a couple of tracks that can be wild cards for fuel mileage like Michigan or Pocono. So it's wide open right now. So even if a Bubba Wallace is plus 15 after a not so good points day over the cut line, you can't say you're safe just yet, even though they get better as the season goes on.
Yeah, and now we have 12 different winners. But of course, you know, SVG is not racing for the championship, so really only 11 spots are locked up. But that leaves, so that means that leaves, you know, 12th through 16th. And like you just said, I mean, like, it, you know, with all the different amount of winners we've had just in the second year of this next gen car, I mean, I think I see like two or three guys that I could definitely see get a win below the cut line. I mean, we talk about, you know, wild cards and stuff. I think Michael McDowell is one of the biggest wild cards because, you know, obviously we got a couple of road courses we're going to. Now, I'm not thinking about Watkins Glen. I'm thinking mostly about the Indy road course. I mean, we've seen it last year. That road course can be, you know, its own beast, its own wild card in a way and stuff too. And, you know, with everybody messing up, I mean, you know, it's a chance for Michael McDowell to pounce, maybe get a win. Chase Elliott, I mean, you know, I think he obviously, you know, he's definitely the best in terms of odds to get a win below the cut line. It could be this weekend. It could be at Watkins Glen or just anywhere else. You never know. And then, I mean, I feel like Alex Bowman's the most obvious guy here. I mean, you know I named 200 guys, you know, for the final two guys who I think could get a win. But again, it's Bowman. He may not be having the best year, but he was the points leader at one point before the penalty stuff. And it's been a rough couple of weeks, but look, drops for Hendrick, you can't count them out. But it is crazy, though, that half of Hendrick is below the cut line. You know, who would have thought? So, yeah. So that's the point situation. But again, like I said in my hot take, keep an eye out on those colleague cars. You know, maybe at least one of them, right? At least one colleague car, right?
They ain't making it unless AJ gets a road course.
Yeah, win. Unless AJ gets a road course win. You know, he has been a little more consistent, but I'd put more of my money on like McDowell to make it or like a Suarez. But we'll see. You never know. But yeah, now time to get into the ratings, the TV ratings. And fellas, you know, we talk about, you know, W's and L's in terms of the ratings column, but it's safe to say this was a massive W for the sport of NASCAR. So let's get into them. So the race, so 4.7 million viewers tuned in to the Chicago Street Race, nearly beating out this year's Indy 500, which scored just under 5 million, 4.9 million. Viewership peaked at just over 5 million, 5.3 to be exact, during the finish. And then Chicago had a whopping 9.29 rating. Just by comparison, it was a 3 rating for the Daytona 500. It was the highest NBC telecast since the 2017 Brickyard 400, which for that race, it was 5.6 million that tuned in. And it was the 8th most watched NBC telecast since the 2015 deal started. And finally, just over 160,000 watched via Peacock and NBC digital platforms, making it the most streamed.
Now, that's the most streamed race, right?
Yes.
Okay, I was gonna say, I heard something said it was the most streamed thing ever on Peacock. Like, that can't be true because they have the WWE shows on there.
Yeah, but before we get into the famous iceberg poll there, I mean, like, Phil, that's incredible. That's an incredible feat there, too, especially just, you know, to have that 9.29 within the market. That's awesome. Awesome ratings, you know, props to NASCAR for that. And props, you know, props to NBC for the promotion, too. It obviously made a huge difference, for sure. Now, we talked about those ratings, but now it's time to get into our own rating segment. It's time for the poll, the famous iceberg poll on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Now, here are the poll ratings. 61% of you thought this Chicago Street Race was a great one, and 25% thought it was just good, just a good race. But the net positivity is 86%. Now, Jared, is that that's certainly one of the highest this year, correct?
Give or take. I think if it's not the top five, it's close. Give or take. Yeah. We've had a few very highly rated races this year.
Yeah, just might be barely inside the top five or just hovering around it.
Put sure. It like this, how does it compare to something like the Daytona 500?
I haven't looked in a while, but I believe Daytona was in the 70s, I want to say.
Okay, so not bad. So very, very positively viewed race for sure. 7% thought it was just meh, just average. But 3% were either below, 3% thought it was below average and 4% thought it was bad. So in the end, that is a 7% net negativity rate. But hey, overall, 86% for the iFamous Iceberg poll. That's pretty damn good. But now it's time to get into the comments section here.
Well, the first one, surprise, surprise, came from Spencer. Do you think it's positive, negative meme, or I'll add in a little fourth fold here. Is it two of them?
Oh, two of them. Since you added the fourth, it has to be two of them, right?
Well, what two?
That's it.
Oh, so meme, positive meme.
Yeah, positive meme.
All right, Spencer says... I just ripped the paper behind it. We have witnessed history here, fellas, or folks. I can't read my own handwriting. Shane Van Gisbergen, P.S. Noah Gregson with the turn six wall, rate limit exceeded. Please wait a few moments, then try again.
Yeah,
positive meme.
Positive meme. And speaking of the rate limits, freaking Twitter locked me out of my account like during the finish. So everyone's just like live reacting to it. I'm just sitting there just alone.
Follow us on Threads.
Yeah. I just joined Threads too, just before the show. So that was easy to join. So follow us on there. But hey, let's get into the positives, bro.
Well, Denny Delivers said Shane Van Gisbergen has to have the best stats in all of the Cup Series ever, leading a 1.0 average finish. Marshall Griffin 69 with our beautiful cars, his profile picture that I will always shout out when I see it. Says, yeah, I'd call this race a massive success. JD185 says, that crossover he did on Haley was beautiful. He does that in supercars too. Used it to his advantage. What a race. Scrolling down a little bit more, we have SMCS Racing Network, who says, a New Zealander who drives in Australia won in America on its Independence Day weekend. You cannot make this stuff up.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. That's right. That's right. Hey, only in America, though, right? Only in America.
Only in America. Yep. Let's see. AlloLover6012 says, I'm in literal shock and awe. I have witnessed a historic moment in NASCAR. Congratulations to SVG. What a race.
Yeah.
Rolling down a bit more. Let's see. I'm trying to find. There's a lot of people. Just incredible race. Awesome race. Fun finish.
A lot of positive comments, it sounds like.
Cito says, first time since Johnny Rutherford in 1963, a driver wins in his Cup Series debut. History. Yeah.
A lot of people had thought, like, oh, that's the first time ever. I mean, it hadn't been done in so long, so it's understandable.
First time in the modern era.
Yeah, in the modern era, though, yeah.
There were a lot of comments. This is actually our most voted on poll of the year. Publicly, it says, I believe, 16 or 17,000. This is the first poll, I believe, so it might be the most voted ever. The first poll that cracked the 20,000 vote mark, at least from my studio here.
Wow.
I was going to say, that's got to be close to the top.
Andrew Meyer says he has his rankings for all the races this year. He puts this one 10th out of 22.
That's good.
And let's see here. So... when can we get NASCAR Supercar Series going, says Luca.
I mean, that's basically what the next gen is. So.
Oh, here's a good one. Quinn says, Mike Bagley is a badass broadcaster. I agree.
Oh, yeah, dude. Just NBC, the radio-style broadcast for these road courses, just absolutely innovative.
And thank the good Lord that NBC broadcasted this one, because I feel like Fox would have just been the same.
I said that earlier. They're just
we'd have Mike Joy tell us how we're keyboard warriors if we weren't liking this race.
For sure. Have some more memes or some more sketches, you know, pre-race.
Get a skit of the Chicago Bull hanging out for Watermelon Sea because Ross won last week. I don't know.
Yeah, something cringy. Well, but all right, so those were the positives. One.
Yeah.
What about the negatives?
Yeah, let's get to the gutter. First one's from ACMO2001. Says, it was truly terrible. I don't ever care to see a race like that again here. The one who came up with this idea should be left in Chicago.
Wow. Whoa. Damn. Okay.
Found your burner, Brett.
Devin 1951. I mean, I get why some people might not like it. Like, I'm not going to say that I like the first two-thirds
of it. It doesn't produce the best product. I mean, that's just typical street course racing.
But let's be real. Diehard fans, we're watching for the racing. We're not watching for the spectacle.
Yeah, exactly.
Like I said, I said my hot take. I think the rain helped it. So
yeah. Oh, yeah, it definitely helped it. Yeah, for sure.
Might help the ratings having it finish as late as possible.
Yeah.
Devin 1951 says that race was horrendous. NASCAR, please never do that again. and then Supercharger Boy 5750 simply says horrible.
Yeah. Those were pretty tame. Those were pretty tame gutter comments, actually. They just, hey, just, you know, negative comment, just left. Left it at that. Nothing personal.
Okay. At least they said zero about Chicago itself.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Yeah. But that'll do it for this edition of the Famous Iceberg Poll on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. And yes, folks, we have reached the top of the hour, but since this race was so short, we can just get through this really quick.
And what really happened, Darren? We were watching Money in the Bank the whole time. We weren't missing anything on TV.
So funny story. So yeah, I went over to Danny's house to watch Money in the Bank. Hey Dylan, what's up, man? How's it going? Yep, Dylan. He's a PR guy for Colleague Racing. So yep, good to see you in the chat. No, me and Danny were watching Money in the Bank, and then Claudia was nice enough to bring out the smaller TV in the living room, and we had the Xfinity race on, and nothing was really going on. I mean, it was raining.
It was just single file. Justin Marks blew his engine. That was about it.
Yeah, and then Cole Custer was, you know, dominating, and I get the sense that those first laps, like, they were just filling out the track, so that's why there wasn't, like, a whole lot of stuff going on. But, I mean, also, it could be to y'all's earlier point, you know, it wasn't a wet surface. So, or was it a wet surface at the time?
No.
Okay. So it wasn't a wet surface. It was a dry surface. So, you know, maybe that could have been the exact same thing for the Cup Series if it wasn't wet. But yeah, shortest race in NASCAR Xfinity Series history. It was a little longer than the shortest race in history. I think that took place in like the 50s or something.
And really, it's funny, both races was shorter because we didn't even talk about this. Honestly, I think I liked the Cup race being 75 laps as opposed to 100.
Oh, yeah, we had missed that. That's right. Yeah, 100 laps, that would have been an overkill. Yeah. I think we would have had like a much more negative opinion on this race if it were 100 laps. Well, I think this is a good cue to keep it at 75, perhaps.
Let me pull this up. Racing Reference, really janky nowadays. I wanted to pull up the Chicago race because I believe it was still... It was almost 3 hours long, and we only finished 3/4 of it. Like, that race would have been closing in on probably 4 hours.
Yeah, you definitely would have seen a much more negative opinion on this race if we went the full distance, I feel like.
Yeah.
For sure. So I think 75% that's a good point. Or 75 laps, that's a good point. But 15 laps, though, oh, gosh. Like, and the craziest thing is the next day, that Sunday, they tried to get it in that morning. What was it? 10 a.m. Central start time as well.
I got up early, came up here, had all my post-race crap set up. I had to go to my cousin's graduation party, which was much more enjoyable than the Xfinity race. And as I'm getting there, hey, did you hear about the Xfinity race? I'm like, yeah, it's still rain delayed. Yeah, forever. They just called it. You know what? Cole Custer's the winner.
Yeah, I was wondering if you were going to do a post-race stream after that.
I was driving through, actually, pretty much, I was in Huntley, Illinois, so I was driving through the Chicago suburbs, as people like to call them. But basically anything in northern Illinois that's not Chicago, people call the suburbs. So this is the resentful Illinoisan. Former Illinoisan speaking from experience. We're not all from Chicago.
Yeah, no.
Thank God.
Just a similar thing with like with Nevada. Well, actually, no, it's not, because like outside of like Las Vegas, it's just like desert and stuff.
I guess people expect Tennessee people. We got to all be hanging out in Nashville for country boots and our cowboy hats.
Hanging out at the Grand Ole Opry every night, right? Right.
I mean, it was fun when we went, but yeah.
Anyway, it was fun for sure. But yeah. But no, so that was the Xfinity race in a nutshell. Congrats to Cole Custer on the victory. We had some interesting weather over the weekend. And also yesterday, you know, the hot dog eating contest was almost canceled due to the lightning round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Jared, what do we have on tap for tonight?
We got a little bit here. So first off, Frankie Muniz says that he is looking to go truck and Xfinity racing, according to Forbes.
Ooh,
this is even better news here. Rumors are, and I might make a video on this coming out tomorrow, that Days of Thunder 2 sounds like it is in development and pre-production.
Ooh. Hey, just really quick. I know it's a lightning round. Just really quick opinions on that. Just what do you think of the movie of that potentially happening? Danny, just really quick thoughts on that.
What is he doing? Is he a car owner? He's way too old to be racing, so I don't know.
He has Cruise, to be.
Come on, Tom Cruise looks like he looks like he's in his 40s.
Yeah, it doesn't look as bad.
So, I mean, okay, think of the timeline. That would be like,
it's a movie.
Like, it'd be like Jeff Gordon is still racing right now.
That'd be crazy though. But I would like to see the whole ownership, like mentor role, or in some way, maybe that's.
I want to see new actors get a chance to tell their story, but him be involved as like an owner, kind of like a Jeff Gordon is today.
Yeah, there you go.
I want it to be Top Gun Maverick 2 on wheels. but. That's some good news. I don't know about you guys.
That's
but
cool.
Anything that can make people think of NASCAR in movie form that's not Talladega Nights, I'm happy with.
Yeah, I agree.
So a little bit of SRX news here. Ken Schrader will be full-time this season, which Ken Schrader makes everything better.
That's cool.
Fun fact, Darian, I believe you were there for it. I actually asked Ken Schrader in 2019 I asked Ken Schrader in 2019 if he could take me to Topeka. He just sort of laughed and said, "Yeah, no."
Nah, if y'all get the meme, y'all get it.
but also, Austin Dillon will be running the SRX race in Eldora. I think it'll be a real threat to win that one. And just a reminder that the SRX is starting up its third season next Thursday, July 13th on ESPN. So Thursday Night Thunder coming back.
And that means chat points. Got points coming for
you. Yeah, got extra points on the line.
The Winston Cup Museum, and sad news here, will unfortunately close until further notice due to lawsuits from the ITG brand, which bought up Winston Cigarettes. Man. And they're trying to finagle their way back into NASCAR. Apparently celebrating NASCAR history when it has nothing to do with selling cigarettes or anything like that. Apparently they have a problem with it. So unfortunately, kind of another thread cut from the past.
Douchebags.
They gonna come after NASCAR for all those retro hats that kind of resemble that logo.
Oh, are they gonna come out? They're gonna come after Jarrett.
Gonna come after Jarrett. You, Jarrett.
Oh, no. Bring it on! I don't got lung cancer.
Oh no.
Last two things here. Cole Custer will be driving the 51 in the Cup Series for the next three races, and nice. JRM, according to some clips from the Dale Jr. Download, is apparently talking to Jeffrey Earnhardt about driving the 8 car next year.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. That'd be interesting, too. Definitely get a lot of traction, for sure.
And that's it.
Yes, and that'll do it for this edition of the Famous Lightning Round on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. And really quick, before we move on, a couple of links I want to shout out, too, whenever it's on my channel. The link to my Discord is in the description below. We just reached just a little over 400 in the Discord. Appreciate y'all supporting that. And also in the description is the link to still pre-order the Out of the Groove diecast, the Daily Downforce diecast. We still have plenty left in stock, so part of NASCAR history.
We don't have them in stock. So don't say that word. That means implies they're ready to go. These are pre-order.
See, it says just over 300 in stock on the website. So, but yeah, I need to be better at clarifying that. But yeah, like Danny just said, but the link to that is down in the description below. All right. Now we are at that point in the show. We are still doing the 75 greatest drivers in NASCAR history list. And now we are about to get to 40 through 36 on the list. Now we're getting to the drivers that are definitely more familiar. You know, I think for the most part, for the rest of the list, you know, if you're a diehard fan, like you've definitely for sure heard of these names for sure. But yeah. Let's get right into this fun list. Once again, 40 through 36. To start us off, I am wearing his shirt on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. You couldn't really see it, but now you do now. At number 40, part of the Alabama gang, Davey Allison. I mean, diehard fans, y'all know his story. You know, unfortunately, was gone way too soon. I did a video about that a while back. Gone way before his time in a tragic helicopter crash. But, you know, outside of that, though, before that, you know, was certainly, you know, one of the greatest drivers in NASCAR history. 19 wins and just 191 starts. Very impressive win rate. Was one of the main contenders, was the main contender for the 1992 Winston Cup Series Championship. he had a lot of trials and tribulations from, you know, his younger brother passing away in a practice crash that same year to having that, you know, nearly fatal crash at Pocono where he flipped so many times. His eyes basically looked like Beetlejuice after that. And then he also won the 19. Yeah. No, his eyes were very dark indeed.
A little too graphic, but.
Yeah. he also won the 1992 Daytona 500 and the 1991 Coke 600. And let's not forget, he was also a part of One Hot Night in 1992 as well. Unfortunately took the brunt of that for sure. Definitely took the hardest impact for sure. But he still won the race. But you know, like I said, even though he passed away early, still one of the greatest drivers ever.
Our buddy Peter Strada points out by pure chance he has the same amount of starts as Danica Patrick.
Oh, that's a random fact. Thank you, bro.
One made a lot more out of their starts than the other.
Yeah, for sure. But Danny, just what do you think about Davey Allison on this list? I think it's perfect. Number 40. That's a perfect spot.
Man, I kind of felt bad having him so much lower. Now I saw that me and Jarrett was kind of similar. I had 45. Jarrett had 47. And, you know, kind of, but you look back on it and, you know, we have him listed as one of the biggest what-ifs in NASCAR history. And ultimately, he really is. And sadly, not having, you know, more than what we have plays into that. Didn't get a championship, sadly, but did win a lot of key races over his career. Definitely deserving to be on this list, but you know, if he had continued, who knows what ended up happening to him. He might not have stayed with Yates Racing, because ultimately over the next few years after that, they would end up regressing. So you don't know that he would have been as good in the long run, but sadly, we'll just never know on that.
Yeah, I think the reason I put him so low was because of the fact I think everyone uses potential as how good they were compared to other drivers. And it's just once you get into that game, I feel like it's a little bit of like, well, you can say anyone had potential. Where I am with Davey Allison, though, is I think he should have won the 1992 championship. The injuries played a horrible part in derailing that season, to which he still was in the thick of the championship fight. All the way until his unfortunate crash at the 1992 Hooters 500. But if he stays at Yates long term, Yates was a powerhouse at the end of the 90s. They did regress into the 2000s, but at the end of the 90s, they were right up there with Hendrick Motorsports, with Roush. So I think that if you're looking at a career with at least 40 to 50 wins. And the career he had so far, it was, you know, to that point before he passed away, it was just, I mean, you look at those three races, 1992 Daytona 500, One Hot Night, the 91 Coke 600. I believe he finished third in points in 91 and 92, I think. I believe his back-to-back years, third in points. He was on track to probably be top five in points in 93. So... It's terrible to not see the potential, but man, he still put together a heck of a career.
Yeah. And his brief time on this, you know, his very brief NASCAR career, you know, did a lot with those starts. Like Peter just said, same amount of starts as Danica Patrick. And we got him at number 40 on this list, but one of the greatest drivers ever, gone too soon. And for sure, just like Tim Richmond, in my opinion, had he lived, Dale Sr. would not have seven championships. At number 39. Oh, we're starting to get into, can you say recency bias? Nah, but we got him. I feel like we have him in the perfect slot. At number 39, Young Money, aka Kyle Larson. Just what can you say, man? We already know what the deal is with him. The 2021 Cup Series champion. He's made just a little over 300 starts and currently has 21 career wins, was the 2014 Rookie of the Year, which, by the way, I remember those days on like Racing Reference and stuff. I remember like the day he was announced back in 2013, he was going to be driving full time in 2014 in his rookie campaign for Chip Ganassi Racing. Most people in those comment sessions thought his career was dead. But then you saw 2014, that was just the start. of a wonderful Cup Series career. He's only won one monumental race, only one crown jewel race so far, and that is the 2021 Coca-Cola 600, and has finished in the top 10 in points in seven of his full nine seasons. Jarrett, that final stat too just speaks to his consistency, not only doing that with Hendrick, but with Chip Ganassi. Basically put Chip Ganassi on his back in those days.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm looking in the chat and so many are like, he's so low. It's like, but yeah, still hasn't finished his career.
There's people
in there saying he should be top 20. I'm sorry.
No.
You need to have a bit more, in my opinion. No. But Kyle Larson, from the start in 2014, I believe it was the race I was at in Chicagoland, which, by the way, that was amazing to see in person. Where he battled for the win against Brad Keselowski, I believe Kevin Harvick and Jeff Gordon, and where Jeff Gordon himself was complimenting him as a rookie on pit road, mm-hmm. and pretty much just saying he was the future of NASCAR.
Yeah.
Even through everything that he went through, you know, the consistency we talked about here, you know, top 10 in points, seven of his nine full-time seasons. And so that consistency is there. I think that getting over that hump more than once of getting a championship is going to be really big in how his career solidifies. But I mean, 10 wins that first year with Hendrick. Mm-hmm. With Hendrick Motorsport so far, he is living up to potential, even if it is checkers or wreckers. So while he is 39th right now, and while just about everyone I think has him like between 36th and 41st on their lists, I think he very easily by the end of the year could move way up.
Hot take with Kyle Larson. What happened in 2020 was the worst but also best thing that ever happened to his career, because it gave him a complete reset mentally, gave him a complete reset as a racer. He had always even said in interviews he would love to eventually go be a full-time World of Outlaws sprint car racer. He got the chance to go do that, basically. Went all over the country racing sprint cars and dominating, and got a chance to find himself as a racer again. And ultimately, when he came back with the right opportunity with one of the best teams in NASCAR, and he has just shown us today what kind of racer he could truly be. Ultimately got out of what was soon to be a dying team in Chip Ganassi Racing, because it was about to go away in favor of Trackhouse Racing's expansion. So I think, you know, it's unfortunate what went down, but in the grand scheme of things, he probably wouldn't have seen it going any other way, because I don't know if he would have landed Hendrick.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, looking back at 2020, yeah, just to briefly talk about that deal and then I'll move on to the rest of his accomplishments. I mean, yeah, it, like, you can't really say like, oh, it was like completely bad, because at the end of the day, he did get a better ride, you know, by the end of the year, for
like
sure.
PewDiePie, but said you failed successfully.
Yeah, in a weird way. Yeah, but also too, you have to remember, he is so immensely talented that his talent got him a second chance. If he were only, you know, less than 50% of the, you know, of the talent he currently has, he would not have gotten a second chance. So, you know what, look, he got the opportunity, and you got to make it, you know, got to make the most of it, and he has so far. So, you know, to have someone like, you know, someone as talented as Kyle Larson, you know, just be completely blackballed from, you know, from the sport over that, you know, yes, it was bad, but, you know, he's so talented, bro. You just gotta, he has to stay in NASCAR, right? And, you know, he's made the most of it. And is you know, on pace to being one of the all-time greats. He's 39 on the list, and he still has a long way to go. Says a lot.
Yeah, where he ends up finishing, I think it'll probably be closer, maybe not top five, but maybe in the top 10 one day. I think something I think he needs to get on his resume, it's going to be harder for him to get, because he's admittedly not been great on super speedways, is a Daytona 500. I feel like it would really help cement him, but we've seen lots of good drivers not get one, like Tony Stewart and Mark Martin, too.
Yeah. So, yeah, Kyle Larson at number 39 seems like a perfect place for him to be. And at number 38, some of these diehards will some of the diehards saw him race when they were younger, as did I. Didn't get to see him race in his prime, though. But at number 38, Ricky Rudd, a.k.a. The Rooster. Ricky Rudd is one of the most consistent drivers in all of NASCAR history. And every full-time season, I felt like he had a streak where he would win every single year, at least one or two races for a while there. I think it snapped once he started running his own team. But before he started doing that, a total of 23 career wins, the 1997 Brickyard 400 winner, and we're just talking about, you know, his consistency, finished 11th or better in points from 1981 to 1996. And those final years were, he was driving for his own team. And I think younger fans will his most iconic ride was the Tide ride. And paint scheme wise, sure. But performance wise, though, you know, look at his career. Early in his career, he helped build Richard Childress Racing and unfortunately got a raw end of the deal once Dale Earnhardt decided he wanted that ride back. So, you know, definitely one of the biggest what ifs in NASCAR history. But then he also, you know, raced for some other teams over the years as well. You know, raced for the Wood Brothers, raced for himself, raced for the the 26 Quaker State team. I can't remember the name of that team, but he raced for them as well.
He ran with Robert Yates Racing in the 28.
Robert Yates Racing. Didn't he drive for Hendrick for briefly? No,
he did run with Hendrick.
Okay. So he at least got
one. I think he was with Hendrick before he went to his own team. Because I think when he went to his own team, Tide followed him from Hendrick.
Well, and remember, he's the one, too, who duct taped his eyes open.
And he was a tough son of a bitch, too. Excuse my French. But, he was. Yeah, duct taped his eyes open, raced with. And also, don't forget, the 1998 Martinsville. Oh, my gosh. His cooling system went off, just completely broke within the first 5 to 10 laps of that race. And he pushed damn near the entire race, just in, humidity, heat. Oh my gosh. After the race, he ends up winning the race, and afterwards doesn't even celebrate, just, gets out the car and just, gets, oxygen, cold water on the face. Definitely one of NASCAR's toughest customers of all time greats.
Someone asked, why is he ahead of people with championships, even though he only got a few more wins? Well, here's the thing. His career high was second in points in 1991 to Dale Earnhardt. It's just one of those things that admittedly he was a great racer, but unfortunately he raced in a time period with Dale Earnhardt, with Jeff Gordon, with lots of other drivers.
Yeah, it was a much tougher era to race back in the day. I know some of y'all would think, one of these fans, things were better back in the day. No, I'm serious. Like, the competition, the caliber of drivers back in those days, you needed to have talent. I feel like nowadays you need to have money. You needed to have talent. Everybody was extremely talented in those days. So for him to get 23 wins in that era, 23 wins in that era with all the different teams he drove for, by the way, just imagine if he was somewhere, more consistently. For example, RCR, if RCR, had kept him instead of Earnhardt, who knows? I'm not saying he would have won 7 championships, but you never know. You never know what could have happened with that. But yeah, Ricky Rudd at number 38, a.k.a. The Rooster. One of NASCAR's toughest customers. And he's not in the Hall of Fame yet, is he? Or did he recently get
it? No, he is not in. He definitely should be, but it's just been one of those things that unfortunately there's just been someone who's just a little better resume.
Yeah, and Cadillac John, thank you for confirming that. Yeah, he definitely needs to be in for sure, eventually. At number 37, now I know for a fact the three of us, and I'm assuming most of the chat, did not see him race in his prime, but you certainly seen him on TV at one point. At number 37, Benny Parsons. Benny Parsons. Now, most of y'all, of course, know him as one of the greatest broadcasters in NASCAR history, but what you may not know, he's also one of the greatest drivers. He was the 1973 NASCAR Cup Series champion. Now, Jarrett, wasn't that championship season one of the most interesting ones? Like, wasn't there like a few stat lines that he had achieved that champions don't usually achieve? Like, he only had one lead lap finish, correct? Or am I wrong in that? Okay.
Yeah, so I'll pull up his season right here. I got it. So,
okay. All right. Thank you.
In 1973, Benny Parsons had one win, 15 mm-hmm. top fives, 21 top tens, and a grand total of one lead lap finish.
Wow. And he was still champion. So, that's interesting.
So the reason he got that championship, and I talked about it in a video I did about him a couple years ago, The reason he got that championship was that essentially Richard Petty had done a good job of being consistently. He was probably going to win that championship that year. And then ultimately something happened in the last race of the year that made Petty lose so much ground because he had car problems. And I think Cale Yarborough also had car problems. And Parsons actually got into a big wreck that ripped off a side of the car.
Oh, yeah.
And all the other teams were honestly so against Petty at that time. that other crew members come together to try to get Parsons back on track to get him out there where he could go get the championship.
Oh, that's even better. I didn't even know that the last part about the team.
Like, they were that fed up with losing the Petty ironically, they were very petty about it.
Yeah, see what you did there. Yeah, so definitely one of the most interesting championships. But that's not it, though. A total of 21 career wins. Finished top five in points from 1972 to 1980. Wow. Wow. That is impressive. And he also won the 1975 Daytona 500 as well as the 1980 World 600. But yeah, when you just talk about his Cup career, certainly the one championship does elevate him for sure. The 21 wins in an era, just beginning in the modern era too, you know, when you think about it. And, you know, having those two monumental wins, or I keep saying monumental, damn, like every win's monumental. No, the two crown jewel wins, the 500 and the World 600, now named the Coca-Cola 600 today, certainly put them up there.
Yeah, Darian, let me get your thoughts. What's Casey Mears' Coke 600? What's the word to describe that one? Is it monumental?
Certainly, it's monumental for him, for sure. Definitely, for sure, for sure. Kamikaze Games thinks it's monumental. One of the greatest wins to him. But nah, back to Benny Parsons, though. Amazing broadcaster and as well as an amazing stock car driver. Mm-hmm. All right, but moving on now to our final guy, one of the most underrated drivers, in my opinion, in all of NASCAR history. This is a guy who I don't think it's talked about enough, but we're going to talk about him. We're going to give him his props. At number 36, Bobby Labonte, one of the Labonte brothers.
He's still racing modified full-time?
I don't know about full time, but I know he's still racing a lot.
Yeah, still racing on the side. Well, he certainly raced a lot. Towards the end of his Cup career too, non-competitive equipment. But when he was at his best, though, this was one of the best drivers in all of NASCAR. He is the 2000 NASCAR Winston Cup Series champion. Ended up locking the race, ended up locking the championship one race early. And really led the points for most of that season. I'd want to say from just a little past the halfway point towards the end when he clinched it, he held on to the points lead for all that time. Also won the Southern 500 as well that season.
He was so close to winning the Coke 600 as his last race, but just lost it right at the end.
I remember that. That's right, 2005. Oh, gosh, yeah. Last season for Joe Gibbs, for sure. But, as far as consistency is concerned, 21 career wins, all between 1995 to 2003. He won the final Winston Cup Series race ever at Homestead in 2003. So perfect way to end off his winning streak, I guess. His crown jewel victories took place in 1995, when he won the Coca-Cola 600, 2000 Brickyard 400 winner, and the 2000 Southern 500 winner. So two of those three coming in his championship season. And also, he was the freaking king of Atlanta towards from the late 90s to the early 2000s. My goodness, like he was like 3-4 wins in a row at Atlanta. It was absolutely insane. And last but not least, he finished top 10 in points 7 times in 9 years between 1995. And 2003. But Jared, do you agree with my earlier opinion? Just one of the most underrated drivers ever, correct?
He's underrated because he stayed around too long.
Does affect it.
Mm-mm. And it's sad to say that, but it is true just because Labonte...
Him and his brother both did that, Terry as well.
Mm-hmm. And Labonte was... He was like at his peak, just like Terry. Like you said, just like Terry. Was top of the line. I mean, that 18 car, when I was a kid, I remember it being Bobby Labonte, just because of how good he was in that. But if you look at the fall off between the first half of his career and the second half, it is night and day difference. Had he just raced maybe three more competitive years, he's easily top 30, maybe top 25 all time. But that fall off, man, I think that's what people unfortunately think of him, because then, you know, he raced a few bad years, mediocre to bad years at Gibbs. He raced at Petty Enterprises, and then he was just a journeyman driver. Like, he raced the 96 for a while, raced the 71, was in the 32 with Go Fast. So I think I wish that younger fans didn't know him for that, because like at his peak, he could go up there with a Dale Earnhardt, a Mark Martin, a Jeff Gordon, any of them. And he proved in 2000 he could beat them.
Yeah, definitely. Danny?
Yeah, he was just really, really good for his time. Very nearly got a Daytona 500 win. He was second to Dale Earnhardt in 1998, but won a lot of other big races, the Coke 600, Brickyard 400, Southern 500, of course, 2000 Cup Series champion. I mean, any driver would want a career that Bobby Labonte had. Might would have liked for the rest of his career to have been good, but you know, he went from the 18 to
Petty Enterprises.
The 43, that was not the right time to be there. Went to the 47, not the right time to be there.
Oh, don't forget about the Hall of Fame racing 96.
the 96, the 32, you know.
But even with the 96 at Las Vegas.
At Las Vegas, fourth? Yeah, that was random, and never got another top five with the team again. But yeah, no, I mean, hey, you could certainly, you know, race with the best of them no matter what equipment. But
funny to think about that 96 drove the ask.com Ford.
Yeah. Oh, that, man, that's a throwback.
Does that website even exist anymore?
I don't think so.
I'm gonna check.
Yeah, you check really quick. But in conclusion, though, I feel like if Bobby Labonte had like retired, let's say like maybe after like, you know, 2009 with Hall of Fame.
Wow,
that's crazy. But if Bobby Labonte had, if he retired, let's say after 2009 with Hall of Fame racing and stuff, I feel like he'd be a little bit higher on the list. But you know, because you know he stuck around a lot and stuff, you know, maybe some people had him like lower. But yeah, you know, 36. Hey, still on the list at least. So, and he's at 36. But
I think of we mentioned SRX. Hey, He's been racing there. Yeah. He actually won at Nashville when we were there.
Oh, that's right. He did. He did win that. That was interesting. Yeah. But yeah, no. So that'll do it for this edition of the Top 75 Drivers List. We went over 40 through 36. And just a really quick recap. At 40, Davey Allison, 39, Kyle Larson, 38, Ricky Rudd, 37 is Benny Parsons. And finally, Bobby Labonte is 36. Tune in next week. We will be going over 35 through 31. We are closing in on the top 30, man. It felt like we just started this list yesterday, right? But I mean, the season's just flown by. But thank you guys for being so invested in this list. Thank you for voting. Thank you for tuning in. And check out who makes the, just outside the top 30 next week. All right. We're now at that point in the show. We are now down to the preview segment. Atlanta / Mid-Ohio preview. Couple of notes before we get into the racing info. Richard Childress will be the Grand Marshal, and Marco Andretti is going to be driving the 7 truck at Mid-Ohio. So if that affects your points, just take that into account.
Just I saw somebody put it on Reddit, and I have no basis for this, but it is fun to talk about.
Hey, Eric's here.
We're going to have Eric here somewhere for the preview.
But there we go.
Someone was like, you know, what if Andretti Autosport bought out Spire for their team in NASCAR?
That'd be interesting. Hey, NASCAR would let them in. That's no problem with that.
Reckless,
you know, we're not
speculation.
Yeah. Reckless speculation. But yeah, no, that'd be interesting. But hey, maybe that might be a gateway to them coming into the sport in that way. Hey, you never know. So we'll see. I'm still waiting on Colton Herta to eventually drive in a truck. I remember when he was on, he said he'd love to drive a truck at Eldora or whatever. So I don't know. Hopefully, he does that somewhere eventually. But so now to the racing info for this weekend. The Cup race. The name for this weekend's Cup Series race is the Quaker State 400. Available at Walmart. That's the name for it. I kid you not.
So bad.
Why'd they have to do that, man? But hey, at least Daniel Suarez will be running that awesome Quaker State scheme.
That I remember one of his best cars this year.
Yeah, me and Danny, we were there when they were unveiling it too. That was awesome. But in total, 260 laps. So for the stages, stage one is 60 laps, stage two is 100, and the final segment is 100 laps. The start time is 7 p.m. Eastern time on USA Network /PRN, the Performance Racing Network. And the weather on Sunday is going to be 90 degrees, cloudy, with afternoon thunderstorms and a 40% chance of rain. So thank goodness we are getting this race in at night. The defending race winner is Chase Elliott. He's in a must-win situation, so hey, you never know. The Xfinity Series race name is the Alsco Uniforms 250, a total of 163 laps. The stages, stage one is 40 laps, stage two, 40 laps, and the final segment, 83, all the way to the finish. The start time is 8 p.m. Eastern time on the USA Network /PRN. Saturday's weather is supposed to be 89 degrees, cloudy with possible thunderstorms and a 40% chance of rain as well. The defending race winner is Austin Hill. And let's hope, hopefully, Josh Williams stays in his car this time around. So we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see
about that. Don't park it.
Yeah. If he parks it again, no, that would never happen. But hey, one could dream, right? That'd be interesting for sure. And finally, the Truck Series race name is the O'Reilly Auto Parts 150, a total of 67 laps. 15 laps for stage one, 20 laps stage two, 32 laps all the way to the finish. The start time is 1 p.m. Eastern time on 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on FS1 /MRN. The weather for Saturday's race, 79 degrees, cloudy with a 25% chance of rain. The defending race winner, that's right, I almost forgot about that, Parker Kligerman. That's right, Parker Kligerman, the defending race winner. But he'll be in NBC for the, he'll be in Atlanta for the Xfinity race and to work on NBC as well. Now, before we get into the pick segment, we have to go to the betting odds, the famous betting odds on the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Let's go over the favorites. Now, I know it's a super speedway, so the odds are going to be a lot closer than usual. Kyle Busch is the odds-on favorite at plus 1,000, followed by Chase Elliott at plus 1,100, Ryan Blaney and Joey Logano plus 1,200, followed by William Byron riding out the favorites part at plus 1,400. As for the rest of the rest,
I feel like Kyle Busch is only up there because he won the last super speedway race, because ordinarily I wouldn't see him being the favorite.
Yeah, and remember, that last super speedway race at Talladega, there was a lot of attrition towards the end too, so need a lot of help from a lot of wreck cars as well. As for the best of the rest, Denny Hamlin's also plus 1,400. Ross Chastain and Christopher Bell plus 1,600. Kyle Larson plus 1,800. And Chris Buescher. Chris Buescher plus 2,000. Damn, I almost made the correction there, and I didn't need to. I almost said Christopher Buescher again. Damn. Yeah, I never did that. That's funny. As for the underdog segment, Bubba Wallace plus 2,500. Alex Bowman plus 3,000. Corey LaJoie plus 3,500. Finished runner-up here in this race a year ago. Austin Hill making a part-time run at plus 5,500. And he's had a terrible season. But hey, he was running up front at Talladega before the wreck. Noah Gregson at plus 6,000. And you know the odds are going to be high for him after the way he's been performing. So hey, you want to make some extra money? Hey, put a, you know, maybe a top five, top three. Want to be, if you want to risk it all, go for the win, I guess. But hey, bet responsibly, of course, bet responsibly. But yeah, so that'll do it for the betting odds segment. Now, really quick, we have some interesting developments in the NWP Fantasy League, the main one. I kid you not, the top eight in points are separated by less than 100 points. This part of the season, we have an eight-way battle for the championship. But of course, I'm only going to read off the top five. And currently in first place in P1 is Sean, 48, NY. And 10 points below him is Trevor Sports, 98, trying to repeat. Polish Victory Laps in P3. P4 is 48 Nation. And rounding out the top five, I am back on a roll. I am fifth, back in the top five.
What happened to Danny B. Wife?
Oh, so she's 7 points behind me in P6. So she's there. But hey, I've gotten back in the group of things. Let's go. Let's go. I'm happy about that.
Come on, Claudia. You're slipping. You're being like Alex Bowman. Yeah,
slipping a little bit there. But hey, she's still in the championship hunt, so that's what it's all about. Now, as for the NWP Fantasy League 2, the points are a little bit more spread out in that one. Race Roar 48 is the points leader, followed by JC_43. 42, Larson 5 in P3. And P4 is Vroom HMS. And rounding out the top five is one of my favorite names, Common Chase Elliott. So yeah, thank you guys so much for playing the NWP Fantasy League this year. Awesome battles we have going on amongst the entire field. And now to the main part of the segment, the pick points. And, hey, chat, Chat, I'm just going to say, got to step it up a little bit now. Hey, you know, you still got a bit of a distance between, you know, me, Jared, and Danny, but Eric's closing in. So if we're going to go over the points, chat, you have a total of 335 points, and you are still the points leader. But Eric Estep is only 3 points behind. And then in third, it's just a battle for third right now. But hey, you never know. Things could turn around for us. In third is Jarrett, minus 57. Fourth is Danny, minus 61. And finally, rounding out the top five is me in the basement at minus 62. And I was just third, but I was only 1 point ahead of Jarrett. So it could have gone either way there.
And chat, because he's not here, you're not going to find out Eric's answer until a little bit later.
Yeah. So, Jared, you're going to save it for the very end, correct? For the last picks? Yeah.
I'm going to save it for once they I'll save the picks for once put their pick in for each race.
So, in a way, Eric not being here is sort of an advantage in a way. He doesn't have to go for, yeah. Big brain move.
Well,
man.
I'm just saying, if they were going to pull what they did last year and cheat, just like they did and just pick the same as Eric each one, I was going to do it anyway.
Yeah. So, hey, better now than later on, right? All right. So let's get into it now. The first picks, Mid-Ohio. So, okay, so that means Jarrett goes first. Jarrett, who is going to win the truck race at Mid-Ohio?
Pick first in a long time. I'm going to savor this. Been a while. I'm going to go with somebody who was one of the few people to lead laps last year that wasn't Parker Kligerman. I'm going to go Zane Smith in that 38. I think he's getting the dub.
Danny?
That's a good pick. I mean, I could see where you're coming from on that one. Even the 38 has won on road courses even before Zane Smith. I know Todd Gillen got a win in that truck too. So for me, I had to think a little bit different here and think outside the box a little bit of who I think is going to win. And ultimately, I'm going to go with Zane Smith because I think he's got a good chance to win the race.
Wow. Well, it's funny you mention it because I also picked Zane Smith for the victory. And I think based on the chat, well,
the chat is going with Zane.
Yeah. It's looking mostly Zane. Yeah. Just lock Zane in. And Jarrett, who did Eric pick?
Oh, he picked someone named Haley Deegan. No, I'm kidding. No, Zane Smith.
Oh, he's got the chat scared there.
Or even. Moment.
All right,
they would not be scared of that one.
That's right. Yeah, I'd be scared for Eric on that one. I'm not even the points there. But anyways, yep. So chat, nobody's gonna gain any points from the truck race. So yeah, we're all winners. Yay, we all won. I guess.
Yeah, we got a participation trophy.
Yes, woo! Yes, for sure.
Give me your Xfinity picks.
Yes, the Xfinity picks. Jarrett, you go first.
You know, I was running the other day and The most difficult part of running is going up a hill, and a hill is who I'm picking, Austin Hill.
Yeah, there's lots of good drivers named Hill. Timmy is the one that comes to my mind. And you know, he could be a great person. You got lots of other good drivers out there, but you know, again, just like earlier, I got to think outside the box a little bit here. And I think this guy's going to park it in victory lane. I'm going to Austin Hill to win the race.
Oh, man, we're doing this again. I also picked Austin Hill to win. And from the chat, it's looking like the chat picked Austin Hill.
They're picking Austin Hill.
And all right. And Danny, ask Eric really quick besides you or at least one of them. Who'd he pick?
All right. Jarrett has it.
Yeah.
Justin Haley.
Whoa! Outside the well, hey, you know Haley's—he's shown his worth, but
this could make or break all of us.
Yeah, this could. Hey, he could either have a big point swing, or you know, we could have the point swing on him. Oh my goodness! But yep, so most of us, four of us, will be going with Austin Hill, while Eric's the odd man out, going with Justin Haley. Hey, chat, you might have caught your lucky break, or this might be your worst nightmare. You never know. All right, now for the cup picks. Before we get into the wins, we got the other two, Jarrett. Who is going to suck?
We'll let you know now that Eric didn't send me the dark horse or suck one since he was gone, so you won't have those, but I will. I know this guy is doing really good this year, but I've looked more often than not at this track with this configuration. He doesn't do too awful well. I'm going to go Buescher on this one. I think he's going to suck this week and get crashed, and it's not going to be his own making.
Danny?
And I am going with the driver that we ranked today, Kyle Larson. I'm going to say Kyle Larson to suck this week in Atlanta. Super speedways can oftentimes not go his way.
Good point. I'm going to go with Austin Dillon. It has been a train wreck of a season. Now he's outside of the playoff bubble now. Kyle Busch, Kyle Busch was obviously going to be the best driver for RCR this year, but I did not expect this much of a gap. And it sucks because Dillon's usually, very consistent, consistently points his way in, except for last year, of course, but usually does. So unfortunately, Austin Dillon is going to suck.
Who's check out? Right.
Yeah, the chat.
For me to chat, just stop. I got to refresh.
I see some Gregsons here, a few Larsons, but
are they forgetting they could actually pick Custer for once?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Don't forget, Cole Custer's in the, he's in the mix. But,
it doesn't matter. Let's just pick one of them.
Pick Gregson. We'll give him Gregson there.
Yeah.
But anyways, now moving on to the underdog segment. Jarrett, who is your underdog?
My underdog is somebody who has been struggling a bit compared to his teammate this year, but I think that super speedways offer an ability to make up for that just because of the great equalizer of the draft. So I'm going to go Daniel Suarez as my dark horse.
Danny?
My underdog for this one is only an underdog just because he hasn't won many times yet, but Bubba Wallace is my underdog for this one.
Yeah, same here. Bubba Wallace is my underdog pick. Pretty obvious underdog pick. He did, lose it by himself earlier at the same track, but hopefully he's learned from that. He has to have a great race. He's only 15 points above the cut line. So, hey, make or break race for him potentially. But as for the dark horse,
I'm saying a lot for the seven.
Yeah, I we'll give him Corey LaJoie. It's not for points, but I'm seeing mostly sevens for sure. And one of the guys says Jarrett's annoyed. Like, no, we do spend too much time on the picks that don't have points or whatever because we want to get it right. But it's looking like the seven for sure. All right, and now for the main event, who's gonna win at Atlanta Super Speedway, Jarrett? Do we need a poll for this?
Well, there was just like 5-12s right there.
Oh, so is it looking like more so the 12, maybe?
I'm actually saying 9, 6, and 12 the most.
Okay, so we'll just run a poll to be safe. So once again, just to clarify, 9, 6, and 12. So let's wrap this up quickly. And once again, that'll do it for this edition of the NASCAR Weekly Podcast. Thank you guys so much for watching. Eric, I'll see you next week. This is Black Flags Matter. Catch you next time. Goodbye.
Ready. Your mic cut out there, buddy.
Aw, man.
What the copy. Right foot down. We got to go for it. Unbelievable, man. Way to keep your head in this. Holy I'm done with it.
It's your face. Set sail.
Steve, you look beautiful. You look great.